Hello, everyone. Are we live? Oh my God, it was confusing tonight. 4 times I had to restart. Are we live, Philosoraptor? Are you getting me? Do we have sound? Stress channel is saying fingers crossed. How do I tell whether I'm live when it's been bugging 4 times in a row? Steven Robinson says, got it. All right. It does seem like we are live. How are you doing, guys? Tonight we will be speaking to Scott Adams, not directly, but through the web, through my explanation to him on the Scientific Method 101, because he was on Twitter and people were speculating that he may be trolling. You know, he's like, oh, but how do I know who to trust? And he sounds kind of stupid in a way that you would sound if you were sarcastic. The level of sarcasm doesn't matter. Scott Adams was lost. He was a lost sheep, and he needs guidance. Whether he's sarcastic about it or not, whether he wants to learn or not, doesn't matter. It gives us a great occasion to review the basics of epistemology. I've even brought a visual demonstration here. This is the Tower of Knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. Never forget. The knowledge, the defended fruit, the forbidden fruit of knowledge always lies on a bunch of pillars. And the only way to get to truly know exactly what's inside is to cut it open. I have brought also a purple pony for my demonstration. If you'd like to send super chats tonight, the cost of this purple pony was $2.97. at Walmart. And, you know, I thought, okay, I'm back on Twitter. It's time to invest again. I remember back in the days I was buying packages of garlic to push away the demons of chaos and the vampires of all kind on the internet. I thought, okay, we can now finally afford to reinvest on the show. And I have bought this beautiful purple pony, which... I was stunned that because I saw it and I was like, this is a fucking purple pony. I've been talking about purple ponies for so many years. I think it's great to have a visual representation. There are so many occasions and debates where I bring it up. I think it's going to be great. By the way, tonight is a double program. Right after the regular show, we're going to have our Patreoning out. Patreon, Subscribestar, backed by. If you are on any of these platforms at the $20 level, we'll be starting around 9 p.m. Eastern Time, depending on how the regular show goes. It could be later. Before we speak about scientific method, how do we know? Because, at the beginning of the pandemic, you could find a speaker to tell you pretty much what you wanted to hear. How do you know? Who is trustable, who is not? That was the question of Scott Adams on Twitter. He's memeing hard. You know, Elon Musk has been responding to him 3 days ago, telling him about his side effects. And today I just responded to him a couple of replies, and they get thousands of likes. It's amazing. So we'll talk about this. The first thing is it's not about trust. It's not about who you listen to. You have to reprocess the science yourself. If you don't do this, you're just a sheep who's going to be moved, swayed one way or another by whoever you hear. And there is just no way you will reach the truth because there's so much spamming in the informational landscape that you're gonna have the mainstream pushing for their position, and they're gonna be better at it because they take over imperialistically. They keep scientists from speaking honestly about it. And so in this context, trusting anyone is the problem. And the very fact that Scott Adams realized he was wrong about the vax, and the first thing he asks is, but who should I trust? That shows you the problem to begin with. You don't trust people, you trust data, you trust what's inside the fruit. The kernel, which we will go through using our philosophical razors and swords. End of the line, Joel says, just watch Bill Nye, the science guy, and trust the science. You will hecking love it. No, that is not good. Before we talk about Go Away says, JF, Scott went through a bitter divorce during the pandemic. Please keep this in mind while analyzing his thoughts and be merciful. There is, that wouldn't be an argument. I don't know that it's an argument that he does, but that wouldn't be an argument. Divorce and any hate that you could accumulate for your exes as part of divorce should be recruited, stimulated inside of your heart to push you toward finding the truth even more. Just stamping it on the public space and say, see who you left. See who you abandoned, a man of quality who will make his mark in history for being right. That's how you take vengeance in divorce, not by being wrong on the vax, of course. Stephen Robinson says, JF, can we bet on science like we bet on the markets? There is the inverse Kramer for the former and the inverse Fauci for the latter. That is very interesting. I had never thought of the concept of an inverse Fauci. The big problem, of course, is that the winners of the public debate on the vax are beginning to be the anti-vaxxers. Scott Adams is absolutely correct on this. But from a money perspective, the companies are getting away with the bag. And so if you had an inverse Fauci, it would be performing extremely bad. Because the fact is that the normies will follow the mainstream science. And no matter how successful the vax resistance movement gets, it's not going to be like 50% or more of the population. It's always going to be a minority that resists, and then the passive majority that somewhat follows, but they're going to go down and up according to how aggressive they go. The Pfizer and Moderna are just winning from a economic perspective. They are losing grounds now in the intellectual conversation. And I'm so thankful that in 2023, we're back to an intellectual game. Because the way Twitter, Facebook, YouTube had coordinated onto controlling the discourse in the past few years was letting you no victory at all. They would not only run with the money, they would run with the facts, they would run with the intellectual victory, but there were no fights. They didn't want the fight. You've never seen one of the mainstream scientists pushing the vax. You'll never see them sit at the same table with someone like me, with the people from Died Suddenly, with even Scott Adams at this point, maybe too anti-vax for them. So that's a first sign. As far as observing the social process around the science, you need to be radical on this. If discussion is impossible, science is impossible. If discussion is not let to be had to occur in a way that the people who are pro, the people who are cons, are given some kind of place to express their opinions and to push in, even if they are interested at proving their point, that doesn't matter. They must be able to put everything on the public space. If you don't have debate on a question, your answer should be, I am agnostic on this question because the opponents of this position are not let to speak freely. Whenever there is criminal prosecution for saying something, whenever there is loss of license, medical license, whenever there is loss of business opportunity through YouTube censorship, you know already that you don't hear all of the opposition. And Scott Adams, you know, was on Twitter, and Twitter was a platform that did these things. And so you refuse to take position. It's quite simple. You cannot have an intellectual victory without engaging in the debate. That is the first rule of the establishment of science, of determining if you have the right pillars right here. And yes, it touches even the most extreme possible beliefs. If no one can make the position no, then I won't believe your yes. Understand? I'm saying this to all the fascists and the people who want to control historical discourses of all kinds. Speaker's Corner sends 32 LBC. He says, take my measly LBC balance, Papa Jeff. I am storing these LBCs like a squirrel, and I will sell when LBC is up there. Thank you so much. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, my name is Lil Fino, revolution on the mic. Ain't no Peterson psych. YouTube too late to stop me. Blue checkmark bitches, yeah, Elon got me. Check the letter, I'm the top JFG. Don't sleep on my nap, won't take leftist crap. Maybe you're a squirrel scratching nuts with rabbis. With rabbies? How do you say this disease? Rabbies or rabbis? Rabbies, I think. Silver Spider says, debaters got 3 IQ, not based making babies. JF gonna lay these facts. I plumb, pecs, and flex, fat, BTC stacks. Super chats and no vax. Word to your mama from Papa JF. That is pretty good. The rap is getting better. The rap is getting better. Rabies. Rabies is how you say the disease, rabies. Okay, rabies. Well. The rap chats are getting better. Jones sends 15 LBC, says, just a lurker putting some respect on JFG. All right, and No Mercy is on Entropy. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. You will need to add a payment method in your Odyssey account if you want to send Super Chats in cash. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. And No Mercy is on Entropy. He says, imagine running into JF at the store in the kids' aisle shopping for purple ponies. Well, that is exactly what I've done. I bought it at Walmart in the kids section, which I like to visit anyway. It's a fun place to be, and kids love it. All right. Before we talk about science and epistemology, a Montreal neo-Nazi was found guilty of promoting hatred. This is Gabriel Soyer-Chaput, a man from Montreal, and believe it or not, this guy is the guy that they called me for. When I say that the Secret Service of Canada called me and they wanted to rat me out someone, it was this guy. So basically, that was 2 years, maybe 2 years ago, I don't know. So they wanted me to bring this guy to justice for hate speech. That is basically what he's been accused of and now found guilty. The sentence that he had written, because he was writing for the Daily Stormer. I never knew this guy. Never knew this guy. He was writing for the Daily Stormer, and he had written nonstop Nazism everywhere. And this is the sentence for which he was found guilty in the court. And when the Secret Service called me, I was like, who do you think I am? Because I'm just a podcaster, you know, I don't know who Gabriel is. I've heard his name because they covered him on the mainstream media and everything, but I've never talked to him. I don't know where he is. And they were like, well, I think you're not letting go exactly who you are right now. You're much bigger than this, Mr. Garyippi. And I was like, no, I truly have no idea who that is. They were like thinking that I was trying to fool them. And I was like, I'm not the guy you think. I'm not the networker of neo-Nazis in Canada. Like planning, are we going to get Gabriel's article on neo-Nazism in the Daily Stormer? Here, come. I'll get you sorted out. No, I never spoke to this guy in my life that I know. I mean, did he approach me as an anonymous person one day? Maybe on the internet, but I never knew certainly that I was talking to Gabriel if I ever spoke to him. And yet they were convinced that I was in the bed with him. Well, now he's been found guilty. The judge decided that saying nonstop Nazism is equivalent to an incitement of violence because it appeals to an ideology that has committed violence in the past. Can you believe this? Americans must be like, holy shit. I mean, in America, this can't happen because of the First Amendment, hopefully. Of course, they're trying hard to make it happen, but they always have to find an actual crime, beside the hate, so that they can say, oh, it was a hate crime. But in Canada, you can have a per hate speech crime. That is what he's been found guilty of. He is currently free and will go back for his sentencing later. Gowai says, I'm always telling my ASIO handler that I'm taking direct orders from JF. That's the problem. You guys are telling them this, and so that's why they come to me after. Thomas Howard says, JF with one foot in a prison cell and the other foot on a banana peel, better be prepared to bug out on a moment's notice when you feel the heat around the corner. No, to the contrary. I see what he said, and I'm like, I don't say that kind of stuff. So they're going to have to work hard to attack me, I guess. So no, to the contrary, I'm pretty reassured that there is not an open case on me for speech. We learned a couple of good news today. Twitter has unbanned a lot of the people on our list. There is Nicolas Fuentes, Nick Fuentes. Sam Hyde has been unbanned. Benson James has been unbanned. And a couple others, I believe. So all of this today, those are very good news. I've tweeted to Sam Hyde to ask questions as a journalist. I said, what are your plans concerning a possible debate with Hassan Piker? We'll see what he answers if he comes back. But Twitter is working hard to make things happen. And they are on the right path. I'm super encouraged to see Nick Fuentes, Benson James, Sam Hyde. Those are big names. I would like them to work a little more on the small accounts, because the small accounts is what gives life to Twitter. And what I see here is a public campaign of bringing back the big accounts. I find this problematic. I understand that the small accounts, they can always start under a new identity, and if they haven't built a following, it's less dramatic, but it sucks. It sucks, and they were harmed just as much as the big guys. Thomas Howard says, what was the quote Andrew Tate pulled out the other day? Show me the man and I'll show you the crime. All right. And Philosoraptor was showing me that there is a tweet by Scott Adams where he said, lol, concerning tonight's show. So hopefully Scott Adams has stopped laughing, because this is a show about science and it's very important as a public speaker. As a public speaker, anyone who wants to speak publicly should be looking at my demonstration today to understand there's a difference between, because on the public space, you get bombarded with all sorts of arguments that are trying to undermine the basis of knowledge. And there's a lack of work to chop knowledge and truly know what is it that you truly got at the center. And I think that this visual demonstration will make the case that, okay, there's basically two forces in determining how sure you are of something. There's a constructive force for knowledge. And those are your basis. This is, do I have the minimum basis? When you construct knowledge, you can let go a couple of things. You can be less severe. You can say, oh, this pillar is not perfect, but I'm going to let it go. I'm going to see what do we get to. That's it. I've lost my pair. What do we get to if we start chopping the pair? But when you go in, there's the destructive force on knowledge, which is, wait a minute, have you tested it on children? Have you tested it for more than a month? This is where the sword comes in. And when you start saying, okay, you don't know this. Oh, you don't know that. You don't know this. You don't know that. And now, Now at the end, with the seed that you are left at the middle, you have what you truly may know. If your pillars are still standing, but you need to chop it. You need to chop it, and we'll get to it. Another good news. Finally, Stardust had a scare because she lost her YouTube account yesterday or 2 days ago. And they have now reinstated the account. These people are so irresponsible. They're playing with people's lives. Sorry, we have banned your account. Oh, sorry, we are now reinstating your account. You're playing with people's entire presence on the internet, and you're fucking it up. What the fuck is YouTube doing? And they're torturing their creators. Fuck YouTube. We learn about Ye. The Republican National Committee will consider a resolution condemning Kanye West, Nick Fuentes, and anti-Semitism writ large. The resolution is being introduced by Sean Steele, a committee member. It comes after Donald Trump's infamous dinner. Wow, wow, wow. That is quite some exposure for the whole Nick Fuentes crew. I think it's fascinating that they want to distinguish themselves. I think it's not particularly clever to pass this resolution, because when you have, and this is the same thing with Gabriel in Montreal, by the way, his argument for defending himself for praising neo-Nazism. He was saying satirical piece. And you know, there is much place for making humor around the Nazi theme simply because we are in a society that uses this word way too commonly. And it would be wise for the right to just shut up about it. Because you're not going to distinguish yourself from the Democrats on this question. You will lose a lot of your base. Because the fact is, it's pretty hilarious the way leftists are driven insane on this subject. Pretty hilarious, and I can think of 10,000 jokes. Each of them I would laugh my ass off about this subject. And at some point, there is a gray area between being a public speaker and being a comedian. And the best jokes are those where you'll never know if it was a joke. Those are the best jokes. And there may be some people with a abnormal brain, like not abnormal in a negative sense, but there may be some people who enjoy that kind of humor, who want to be thrown into the space of uncertainty in their brain. And we're denying these people a place in society. Perhaps there were people reading Gabrielle's article. I don't know about them because I never read them. But perhaps there were people who were reading his articles and laughing their ass off. Why don't we let these people exist? Why do we have to persecute them? The Sixth Sense says, that's all I have left on there, my music. If they ban me for that, then all hell will break loose. There's nothing that is even remotely close to TOS violations. Yeah, YouTube, I think, is just trying to have less videos, basically. They're dominated by a mentality of a little bit like the Costco mentality, you know, let's just deliver one thing, but let's deliver in big quantities. And it's not what led to YouTube becoming popular. So they're totally violating their own principles and what led them to achieve this status. Because no one would be speaking of YouTube if YouTube was just one of the 100 platforms showing you corporate stuff. It wouldn't be interesting. The internet would have moved away from YouTube. What led YouTube to win was the full diversity and scope of opinions, was knowing that I'm going to get on YouTube and find something weird that I wouldn't have found elsewhere, but that would be perfect for me. This is what was genius about the algorithm too, but they destroyed all of it. NASA and DARPA will test a nuclear engine for future Mars missions, so they will they will be basically heating up a gas. So basically, they will use the nuclear energy to heat the gas and then release the gas. And because it expands as it heats, it pushes forward. The goal is the nuclear engine is 3 to 4 times more efficient, they say, than a traditional chemical equivalent. So it's just a way to heat quicker, heat more with less. And the goal would be to get faster to Mars with this kind of stuff. And finally, before we start our science course, there was an appearance of Crowder on Timcast. Let's see what he had to say.
Before we get to that, before we get to like the finance,
yeah, stuff, let's go to the timeline.
Let me ask you this. If someone publicly was going, and by the way, I'm not going to be doing the personal stuff. I'm not going to be coming in here calling anybody a bitch, right? Sending out hatchet people. I understand why Candace was mad. Honestly, I understand why she was mad. I'd probably be mad too. So I don't think it gives an excuse to go and talk the way like every girl does who gets their husband into a fight at a bar, but I understand why she was upset. If you had the ability, if someone's going out saying, hey, you're a difficult person who only cares about the money and that you're a bitch, and you had the opportunity to clear your name because it was verifiably untrue, which now no one is arguing, would you do it? How else would people switch from, it was about a $50 million salary to, oh, recording a phone call? Do we allow it when James O'Keefe does it? Is it only when corruption is on the side of the left? And here's the issue is, I'll tell you who this hurts, the dishonesty. I'm not just saying Daily Wire. This is about the entire movement as a whole. There are a lot of practices that go on, and it hurts.
Yeah, so I think that he's making a good defense. Recording is not a problem. We don't take issue with it when it's Project Veritas doing it. Why wouldn't we record within the right to expose each other? That is valid to me. Now, of course, Steven Crowder is over-promoting this stuff and taking the moral high horse, and people were pointing to a legitimate contradiction, which is that Crowder adjusts his discourse to survive on YouTube. Crowder, as in the past, adjusted his merch to stay on YouTube. So it's a business practice that you have to do in this domain. So what he's criticizing the Daily Wire for doing, he is doing the same in his own ways. And so he deprived himself of some income to show YouTube, all right, we're not going to sell this cup. We're not going to sell this t-shirt. And that is a valid objection for consistency and hypocrisy in Crowder. In general, though, I am favorable still to Crowder because he's making a drama out of nothing, but he is bringing attention to an issue that ultimately is something. It is an issue, the control and the ownership in internet creation. And it's very important that the young people starting off on the internet know this. When you sell yourself away to a corporation, you lose everything. Instead of building for yourself, you will find yourself having any supplements that you generate be drained by your boss. And so it is. I mean, there are people who are young and they think, I'm not good enough to go on my own, but if I join a big network, I'll get the promotion and then I can establish myself later. It can be a rational position. If you have a contract that binds you for a couple of years, but then after you're a public personality, you've benefited from the exposure and you go on your own, that's totally viable. But you have to know what you're sacrificing, because there is so much to be made if you can keep it all to yourself. There is a place. If you sell your own book rather than trusting a brick and mortar editor, first, it's going to be easier. Second, as this book gets more and more popular, it's more and more money in your way. So it's a passive income that is extremely precious. And we need to learn to respect passive income. All right. Philosoraptor says, would you say Shapiro does more good than bad? Look, there's the classic Ben Shapiro who was debating college leftists right in the crowd, you know, and that was kind of funny. And it was great to see a form of rationality being laid out in front of them. That being said, Shapiro, being the gatekeeper that he is, at this point, probably makes more bad than good, in the sense that he is draining attention toward ultimately a not America first position. He is draining attention in a Israelized form of right-wing intellectualism. And that is not good. That is not good because he can't engage on the important questions that relate to demographics, that relate to demographic stability in the U.S. And when he does engage on them, he gets exposed. You know, Halsey keeps reminding me that Ben Shapiro has said he doesn't care if America becomes non-white. That is a strong statement, because I'm not sure that the non-white America will be as welcoming to Ben Shapiro as the white America that he knows. All right, Scott Adams, let's review some of the things he has said on Twitter. He says, I would like to publicly apologize for continuously ignoring the accurate data, which he puts in quotation mark. So, is he sarcastic? Is it accurate data? You never know with Scott Adams, I guess. On COVID, that people sent me for 3 years. But just so I don't make that mistake again, is there a separate list of the strangers I should trust to know which data is the good stuff? And I said, you're committing the mistake again. You're looking for people to trust. There's no way around it. You're going to have to start caring about data and arguments, not people. And he says, are you suggesting I trust my own ability to read the data? I did that and determined it was all crap. Can you teach me how to spot the good stuff? Absolutely. As I say to young kids, you can do it. I'll have a full show tonight explaining the basics. I'm not sarcastic and not meant to demean you. I will lay out the basics for how to interpret data. In other parts of the conversation, someone was accusing him of sarcasm, and he was saying people just can't take yes for an answer. And later he said, this is exactly the kind of skill I don't have. I can't tell who is credible. I'm glad so many of you can. Again, it's not about credibility. It's about how do you process the data, and is the claim of people linked to their data, or are they overclaiming for the data that they have? He says, Dr. Malone got vaccinated the same time I did and for the same reasons. Was I supposed to ignore that? Yes, Scott Adams. Yes, the people and their decision is to be fully ignored. Their rational may be heard, but their rational will have to go through the process of the scientific method. You're going to have to establish whether they have a rational or whether... Dr. Malone was under extortion. So no matter how specialized he may be or an expert he may be, as he takes this decision, he is under extortion. He knows that it's going to get hard for the vax. He knows he has to travel for his various appearances. He knows that there is social pressure on him. So no one is valid as a model in a pandemic. And it is not a valid argument that some expert got the vaccine. And in fact, he ended up regretting it. So when you trust someone based on who they are or based on their status of authority, you are already outside of the scientific method. And finally, another error that he committed today, a trial of intention. He says, name someone prominent who didn't monetize their objection to the shots. He was saying this in response to someone who was saying, you know, follow the money. And that's also a bad argument on the anti-vax side. It really doesn't matter that Pfizer is economically interested. Ultimately, what matters is, can they bring me data that I can believe that would fit the standard for what they want to do to society? That is the question. So how do we interpret data? I have a second pair. See, this is one of the tricks. If you ever do video production, it's good to have doubles. My pair fell earlier. I have a second pair, no problem. Let's say that this pair is a claim of knowledge. And the claim of knowledge could be something like, the vaccine is safe and effective. The vaccine is safe and effective. The first thing you need to do is determine who is claiming this. Who is claiming this? Is this the person who performed the experiment? So when the experts come in, and here the experts are represented by this pony, when the experts come in, Leana Wen, and she says, oh, I've studied that claim, and I know everything about it, and I'm telling you it's safe and effective. They are to be discarded. Never listen to the purple ponies. Never listen to Fauci coming in and saying, we have done the experiment. We have done the experiments. The vaccine is safe and effective. People are not to be trusted. Never. Never it is people that you trust. The only reason you would have to listen to Fauci would not be to let a belief of Fauci penetrate you. It would be to know where did Fauci get the information he's talking about. The only valid speaker for a claim of knowledge is the person who performed the experiment. This is the only valid source of knowledge. And in journalism, of course, we can extend this and say, in journalism, the experiment is the interview. So in journalism, I can take a claim of knowledge like Donald Trump said A, and that would be a valid claim of knowledge. I have a journalist telling me, yeah, he said that to me, and I'm reporting it. One rule on... So it may sound shocking for Scott Adams, but none of the people you've ever seen on TV are the people who run the experiment. None of these people are to be listened. You take everything they say, you throw it out. The only thing you retain is what scientific study are they talking about. There is a second rule on interpreting scientific data. If the data is not publicly available, it doesn't exist. So when they did all these trials and they hid the data in the Pfizer trial, and it took court papers to be filed to reveal it, and we only have a fraction of them still. That is a telltale sign. You don't engage. This is not a sufficient basis to even believe that the pair here is supported by any pillar. So we're all. Anonymous reports, a journalist telling you, anonymous sources tell me that, zero, kicked out. There's no pair on the plate. A person saying, we've made a study, we are reporting you only the end result, the conclusion of the study, but all of the data must be hidden because unfortunately there are lots of anti-vax out there and they keep misinterpreting and misusing this data. Kicked out. That is not valid science. You have to show it all or you show me nothing. And very early in this pandemic, it was the case that nothing was shown to us. so it all had to be discarded. A third rule, is the claim coming with disclosure of the entirety of the methodological process? So it's very easy to say, well, we run a trial. We've run a trial and it works. But does the claim come with sufficient disclosing of the details? Okay, how did you run this trial? Did you get subcontracting companies to do it? What kind of age did you choose as part of your trial? How did the people get involved in this trial? All of it was missing for a while people were cheering on the vaccine. All of it was missing back in the days where Trump was pushing for the vaccine and saying we developed it at lightning fast speed Well, what do you know about it, Trump? You have delegated to Pfizer, who has delegated to subcontracting entities who are around the world. You have no control over how you run this trial. And when things were discovered, like Robert Malone exposing early because he had access to the documents before they were public, when Robert Malone comes and says, hey, they didn't run all of the tests that you would expect, that's the first sign that the reason the methodology was hidden from us is that the methodology was lacking. So that's our third rule. We have already rejected the fact that there is something here to support the pair. You don't have your pillars of science: methodology, disclosing, transparency. That's it. And we're not even done. We're not even done, but we're not even coming to the point of asking, are we going to chop this pear here and see what we really got in it? A fourth rule. Was the methodological design handled in a way as to capture any and all data relevant, or was it designed to reach an already made conclusion? So very early in this pandemic, not so early, actually, but a couple of months after the vaccine was already rolling out, we had people come out and say, my doctor, the doctors that are involved in these trials are denying that my effects came from the vaccine. So that seems like a trial that is run with the intent of, if they are in the control group and they come with an ailment, perfect, that's COVID. If they are in the vaccine group and they come with an ailment, try to deny that it's the vaccine. And this is what they've done. We had reports in the media that a lawyer who is in South America, was involved in the Pfizer trial. His personal doctor was convinced that the vaccine had caused his side effect, which was related to his heart and his breathing. But he ended up being classified by the Pfizer doctor as, oh, this is COVID. So, and when you look at what they've done with the 14 first days of the effects group, that is an example, a textbook example of a methodology designed to find what you want. They have defined the first 14 days after getting the vaccine. If you get sick, it's COVID. If you get sick, it's not because of the vaccine. See, if you get local pain in your arm, that's the vaccine. But if you catch COVID in these 14 days, they don't include it as a failure of the vaccine to work. They want to push it away and they want to ignore it. That is cherry picking of data. That is a methodology design where no matter what happens, you're going to find that the vaccine is efficient because it's the only thing that can happen. You just chop 14 days of your data in one of the groups. So we have our fourth pillar, although I only had an object that had three pillars, but I guess you can imagine a fourth pillar here is the methodology formed in a way that would anyway find what you want. And a very important one, the fifth pillar. What is the domain of validity of the methodological design in time, space, and genetic diversity? Another pillar that you need. You cannot come to me with, JF, I've gathered data, I've gathered samples from sun rays. I've been observing the sun rays every year for the last 40 years. Here's the pattern. Here's a graph of exactly how they vary. Therefore, sun rays are good for your health. The experiment needs to be about the thing that you want to conclude. And this is where we're going to start to chop. But when you determine what you really know, you have to start being aggressive. Up to then, we were constructive. Up to then, we were establishing our pillars. And, you know, not everything is perfect. Okay, the South American guy might have been an error of the trial. But errors happen in trial. Maybe it was a bad call. Okay, we're going to leave it to Pfizer on this one. Now we start being destructive on the knowledge. So you have the claim the vaccine is safe and efficient. What is the time domain of this claim? Well, you have a trial that was done on 3 months only. So we chop a part of the pear. This trial tells you nothing about this part of your life. What happens after 3 months? What happens after 6? What happens after 5 years? So the vaccine is safe and effective in the sense that it doesn't quite kill you, nor does anything observable within the first 3 months. When you start to chop the claim, you start to change the claim. So now we're not at the vaccine is safe and effective. We're at you haven't observed anything super wrong within the first 3 months. Are there health effects that can show up later? We have no idea. It's a new technology. Are there things that are permanent that can hurt people? Definitely. There is a history of drugs that have hurt people, losing limbs, losing extreme disorders, handicapping them for life. And yet all we have is 3 months. And therefore, the claim has been changed now. The vaccine is safe and effective if you believe that 3 months tells you the whole story. What about the vaccine in space? And I don't mean space outside of planet Earth here, but the tests have been made on a certain population. This population was located at certain places. They were able to get into the trial. They were selected to be a subgroup of the whole of population. Among other things, people who were very old were not included very much in this study. The study overrepresented the 40 to 60 years old. Well, you're gonna make that claim of safe and effective for 14 years old. They were not in the trial. You're gonna make that claim of safe and effective for 80 years old. They were not in the trial. So you don't know this. You don't know if you're gonna hurt teenagers, if you're gonna hurt young adults. You don't know who you're gonna hurt, and you don't know if they're gonna hurt after 3 months. And then another question as it relates to the domain of validity, genetic diversity. You've made this study on a subset of genetic diversity. It can only get worse. It can only get worse because the vaccine hasn't met the test of reality, and the test of reality is always rough to any product. So when you selected your people, they were probably well-off people. They were probably not representing the full scale of poverty in the world. And you're gonna then argue that it's good for Africa, that it's good for Chicago, that it's good for France. And so you're going to make a bigger claim when you say the vaccine is safe and effective than you truly can know. And so genetic diversity, not taken into account very much in the original trial. You don't know that much, really. You know 3 months worth of data, and at some point it became 6 months. And the core of your truth seems to be much more limited than the public claim that you've heard. So what we've done is we've shaved basically the pear up to now, and we've shaved our demonstration to a core truth. The core truth is we didn't notice anything on the first 3 months of a bunch of patients who were roughly 50 years old on average. the window of observation was limited. Here's another thing that was not only limited, it was a very, very much a red flag of the initial studies. They didn't mention transmission at all. The submission to the FDA didn't talk about transmission. And yet you had the experts on the public space argue that we would flatten the curve, that we would stop this virus, that the best way to stop this virus was to get the vaccine. But there was zero data on transmission for months and months. And eventually the data came out, and it was that it's not resolving transmission. That is a big missing piece of the pair. You have a vaccine that's supposed to stop a pandemic, and yet this vaccine behaves like a medicine. This vaccine behaves like, oh yeah, you're going to be hurt a little less. Now ask yourself, is it possible that Pfizer knew about the transmission not being very much blocked by the vaccine? Of course they knew. Of course they wanted to prove that it did. And so, of course, they gathered this data. So why did they not submit it at the FDA? Well, they decided to not submit it because it was not saying what they wanted. That is cherry picking, and it's another methodological error. You have a limited amount of knowledge already, and on top of it, you're not showing me everything you've done. You are choosing only that which advantages you. And somehow in the statistical distribution of what you're showing me, you make an argument that it stops hospitalization. We don't have here a division of ages. We don't know, is it going to stop hospitalization in 14 years old? You're just asking me to believe that on average, on a sample that is large by medical standard, but that is very small by the standard of who actually gets hurt by COVID. Okay, because if you do a 30,000 or 60,000 subject study, that's a big number. But it's a big number if they were all sick from COVID. The big problem here is you're talking about a disease to begin with that was only affecting a small percentage of these 60,000 people. So the real sample of the relevant COVID-affected people is much smaller than your 60,000. And so when you end up saying we saved some hospitalizations, it's a very restricted number of people. I remember seeing numbers like, 80 hospitalizations instead of 40. And I don't think this covered the whole thing, and you would have to add the different trials, but we're talking about minimal amounts of data on actual COVID stopping or actual saving from COVID. From a very large sample that is large only by, that had to be large because COVID was so not dangerous for people. So once we have established what we truly know, it's very little, and there's more. These pillars here, you always have to keep them in mind once you have got your peer, once you have established what you truly know. So what do we truly know? But a very specific population of 50 years old survived the vax for three months. That is what we know. If you had Leana Wen and Dr. Fauci be honest, they would have come out on CNN and said, people have survived the vax for 3 months up to now. Do you want to try it? But that's not what they said. They said, we have solid demonstration. The vax is extremely safe. It works at 100%. Now, when you truly know what you're supposed to know, if everything goes right, you have to go back to your conditional pillars right here and say, okay, what is the condition on which even this small amount of knowledge do I have it? Well, let's give a list of conditionals. The scientists gathering the data were not influenced into self-deception. The scientists gathering the data did not misinterpret effects of the vaccine as effects of COVID. The scientists gathering the data did not intentionally commit fraud. The design of the study did not cause blind spots in other domains of relevance, like a study can be designed in a way that you miss something grave. And here's an example of something that the study submitted to the FDA could not catch properly. You see here, this is the wave of COVID death. As you will notice, when in 2020, on the fourth month when it happens in England, you have death increases, and those, by the way, are kind of exaggerated because it always gets red in this season. This is the winter flu season. And on any year, you will see these age groups become red. But still, if you want to make an argument that COVID is dangerous, it's going to be between the 25 and, in fact, more the 50. Because here you have much less red. This looks like, and on the male side, it's 0.4%. It's basically what you would expect in a flu season. So the real damage that COVID was doing was starting at 50 years old and above. Look at the people who are 0 to 24. They're not affected by COVID. They don't die. And so you can have a blind spot in a study if you aim for these people here. Of course, you're going to conclude that the vaccine reduces hospitalization. But you've picked a population that was particularly targeted by COVID. If you boil it down to, is it useful for a 22-year-old to get the vaccine? And they were told, they were forced to get the vaccine. It's absolutely not useful because they didn't have to be scared of COVID to begin with. So an experimental design that says, oh yeah, we just tried it on a population of 35 to 65 years old and on average, 48, 50, something like this. You are picking a population and then extrapolating this to domains of validity that do not apply for your study. Knowledge that is not in the peer because it was cut out. You cannot use these cut out part of the peer. Once they are chopped, they are chopped. You lose them. It becomes chaos and absence of knowledge. Other pillars that we are still trusting. The claim that it is safe and effective is not being applied to a range outside of the domain of relevance of the initial study. So that is what I just described, the age or some other factor that you've not considered in the original study. There were no social or political pressures favoring one result over another. That is another pillar you need to have for science to have occurred at all. If you can lose your license if you don't conclude this kernel of truth, you don't even have science going on. We lose this pillar. Now, is it questionable that there has been social and political pressures favoring one result over another? Absolutely unquestionable. It is absolutely certain that we're not standing on this pillar. If my sword was strong enough, I should chop this pillar and you would see, in fact, here. That's what we know. We know nothing. Nothing is standing. Because the whole process has been biased from the start. There was no science standing, and the kernel of truth that you may have believed, if other things were done properly, they had nothing to stand on. Another pillar that we would have had if we continued caring, the people suffering from side effects felt that they could express freely their worries without intimidation or mob pressure. Is it the case? Because you create a social context and it affects the studies. Is it the case that the patients felt a need for the vaccine to work? That is a problem that is very often not addressed at all in official studies and in all these studies that are submitted to the FDA. But you have partisan subjects. They all want the vaccine to work. And and here's the problem. Many of them know whether they got the vaccine because you didn't have a double-blind process. How do I know this? Well, first, there's been exposure of internal Pfizer document. and there's been complaints from the inside that patients were exposed to their own documents, telling whether they were on the control side or on the vaccine side. But I also know that anyways patients know, because the control injection isn't as painful as the vaccine injection. So when the patient feels, oh my God, my arm is hurting, for 2 days after, they know that they are in the vaccine category. And what's going to happen under a highly political, highly pressured trial, each of the patients, I swear, will want the vaccine to work. And they will shut up. If they know that they've had the vaccine, that they've had pain in their arm, they're going to shut up as much as they can. The only reason you're going to see them at the hospital is if they really think they're about to die. Whereas the people who know that they didn't get the vaccine because they have all their friends and families, some of them report very big arm pain, they will know that they were in the control group. And they'll be like, okay, I really want this vaccine to win. And so I'm going to pay attention to every disease I have. And I'm going to report them correctly. And of course, that person will end up reporting more disease. And you're going to end up with, they pay so much attention to any coughing they may do, they're going to end up including more data on the sick side, on the control side of the trial. So true double-blind processes is a standard in pharmaceutical research, to the point where the current design in drug research is no one knows if you're in the control group. No one knows, even the nurse injecting you, it's up to the CEO, basically. They have a password. They have some kind of an encrypted key that at the end will give you, okay, this guy was in the control group, this guy wasn't. They didn't do this in the Pfizer trial. And we have internal reports that, in fact, there was kind of an effort at showing papers to patients. There were papers that were in the view of the patient that were revealing to them whether they had the vaccine. So you would have another pillar chopped here. Our knowledge is not standing on anything at this point. I want to address now the bad arguments and get into the social world of the discussion about this shit show that the fall of knowledge here is. Because you have the Dr. Fauci talking about it, and you never quite know what are the good arguments. And here's a couple of bad arguments on both sides. Trials of intentions. Did they monetize their opposition to the vax? That was a question by Scott Adams. Doesn't matter. I have to monetize my life because I have to live. And the McDonald's worker has to monetize their life because they have to live. Does that mean that they'll make a bad burger? No. In fact, as a public communicator, I make it my job to be trustable. And I accumulate trust. And the more people trust me, the more I make money. And you see, our audience is growing since we're back on Twitter. So that's a very good sign. It's a sign that the credibility I've achieved by being full-time streamer for 7 years is paying off now. And it's going to keep paying off, and I'm going to be punished if I get it wrong. People are going to start hating me. There's going to be troll campaigns. They're going to say, hey, JF, you were so wrong 6 years ago. And so it doesn't matter that someone monetizes their opposition to the virus. Everyone is monetizing everything they do that's worth to society. That's an argument that is bad on the Scott Adams side, but it's also bad when the anti-vax do it. The anti-vax will say, are they economically benefiting from the vax being perceived as safe? Not valid. You don't exclude people. See what I've done with knowledge? It was enough to completely kick out this claim. If you concentrate on kicking out the knowledge claim, it won't matter. The expertise and the economic interest and the incentives This is all decoration. The people discussing the pair falling don't matter, no matter on which side they are. Those who are claiming that it's still on a pillar, those who are claiming it's fallen, none of this matters. Ad hominem, arguments by authority. So whether someone is trying to attack the credibility of someone, you know, I've had, there are so many attempts at destroying my credibility. It's amazing. I mean, I'm making fun out of it. I'm making it a sport at this point. But people have hated what I had to say so much that they've invented stuff about my private life up to the point of claiming that I was some kind of rapist. That is ad hominem, and it is to be completely rejected. And the inverse of an ad hominem would be an argument by authority saying, oh, this guy is very credible. Kicked out. Whether the pony is credible or not, what they have to say doesn't matter. The only information that a pony can bring you is the state of the pair and the state of the pillars. Now, you can still pay attention to the social process around the kernel of truth. You can pay attention to how ponies are positioning around it and the constraints that's applying to them so that they have to claim something, convince you. Here's a couple of signs that we had in the pandemic that you can gather from the social process rather than from the state of knowledge itself. You can ask yourself, have I been given all of the weapons to counter the argument? Or have I been denied some? You can be denied your ability to chop the pear. You can be censored on this aspect. You can also be denied your ability to evaluate the pillars. That's through lack of transparency. We've seen both things in this pandemic. We've seen a lack of transparency from the companies. We've seen this lack of transparency be justified by the CDC saying, if we expose too much, the anti-vax are going to have way too many arguments. Well, that is something that's said by a pony that matters. The fact that the pony is supporting the idea that the pair is still up there and still standing, that matters a lot. You're telling me that if you were to show me everything, I would be disgusted to the point of not wanting your vax? You're basically telling me that the vax is bad and dangerous. And now we know it is. Look at this. Young people were left alone by the COVID, the natural COVID. They were handling it well. The vax begins and the lockdowns and other factors. So I can tell that every red dot here is due to the vax. But let me tell you, it's not due to COVID. So COVID was here and the young people were doing fine. They were going toward their reproductive age, totally untouched by COVID. And then we start lockdowns and we start vaccines here. And then we kill young people. Those are all, each of these red square is hundreds of young people dying. Hundreds up to thousands, if we consider the entire planet, have been ripped off from their life for a problem they didn't have. We have killed young people for something they didn't need. Another sign that you can observe in the social developments around science is, have I observed the experts lie about the kernel of truth? One very obvious and admitted lie that's been on the record from the beginning of this pandemic is the idea that masks don't work, which they literally said, oh yeah, we said this, it was because we wanted to lie to people because we wanted to keep the masks for nurses. And then they found themselves with the problem that somehow the companies had planned producing massive amounts of masks, and apparently there were no shortage now. It was, in fact, there was an overstock of masks. And suddenly they switched from masks don't work, leave them to the nurses, to masks work, you have to wear them. Absolute lie. based on no new data. So when you observe that the ponies on one side are lying, that is a sign that they are pursuing something else than the truth. And that was an intentional lie. They called it the noble lie at some point. That was the principle of a noble lie. The idea that sometimes you have to hide the truth to the population to control them better. If they are on this program, you know that there's no point at which their assessment of the pair and its standing will be valid. 3, have I observed the experts cut the corner round more than I would if I was the one handling the sword? So, have they been serious at chopping the pair the way we did? Have you ever heard an expert that's pro-vax in the early moments of the pandemic say, hey, there's a limited domain of validity to these studies. Hey, we don't know what will happen with you 3 months later. Hey, we don't know about the social consequences of lockdown, but you may very well commit suicide as a result. Hey, we don't know the effect of having lockdowns on heroin consumption in America. They never admit what they don't know. They always paint a positive picture throughout the pandemic. They're just starting to admit now, there were some things imperfect. But when it mattered, you never heard them acknowledge the weaknesses of their own methods. You never heard them and saw them cut the pier and chop away the certainties. But, oh yeah, we're not sure about this. Oh yeah, we're not sure about that. Oh yeah, this part of the pair does not belong on the stand. All they were saying is there is evidence that it will work. But again, we're talking about domains of application. A little study in which you studied 100 families and you had them, some of them wear masks, some of them don't wear masks. Some of them have some kind of lockdown imposed on them, some of them don't. Is not telling you what you're going to do, what it's going to lead to when you apply it to the whole of society, especially not if the whole of society can only apply it imperfectly. You know how they went to, okay, it's going to be locked down except for the grocery store workers. Well, you're already outside of the domain of application of the original study. In the original study, you didn't have people going to the grocery store. You were truly locking them down. You were truly imposing the mask wearing. So in the original study on masks, there was no test of if you do this at the level of the whole of society with little supervision and with people still seeing their families. And I'm not arguing for stricter lockdowns here, to be clear. But I'm arguing the original studies supporting mask use were family environments of very restricted and very specialized kind. They were not looking at whole of society interventions of any kind. So between the small family context in which you did your study and imposing it on the entire planet, there is a massive difference. And you could have addressed that difference progressively. The experts could have said, all right, you know what? We're going to try in this city, we're going to do a true lockdown. If it works, we're going to apply it everywhere. So what do you end up with? Well, nature is obviously more complex than anything you can capture in a methodological system, especially if your methodology is super focused. So nature throws at us variants. Nature throws at us circulation of the virus that's not possible to control. Nature throws at us, we need grocery stores because people need to eat. Therefore, we're not going to lock down those employees. And then you find yourself with a context of society that is completely unrelated to the original study. And even those original studies, they were showing marginal gains on, oh yeah, okay, those who had masks, they had a little less transmission. You have no idea what will happen when you let people go get their milk at the grocery store. The Sixth Sense says, right, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma and CPD were at the highest risk, especially the very old with weak immune system. Yeah, and the whole consequences on other things, like don't obsess about COVID and COVID deaths. That by itself is a categorization, by the way, which was also lacking. It was one of the weak parts of the pair that would get chopped out. But this whole conception that, okay, you have to ask yourself, have the experts used a methodology that exaggerates their side of the discourse? And of course they did. We saw it from the beginning of the pandemic, before there was even talk of having a vax. You saw that they started claiming COVID cases leading to death. COVID cases that are deaths, COVID deaths. Now, none of these were actually pointing to deaths that have been assessed by a professional to have been caused by COVID. They were all done from a statistical perspective. If you passed a positive test and you died, that's a COVID death. And this whole term COVID death is one of the most deceptive things I've ever heard. It's the idea that you were a COVID case and you died. So it's a COVID death. see the labeling here? But when you chop it, when you get to the kernel of truth, what's the kernel of truth? The kernel of truth is that people had COVID and they were dying from something. Now, you can have a massive exaggeration here of the gravity of the virus that happens purely socially, that is not factual in nature. And when you look at the curves of excess death, it doesn't seem that anything that happened in the last 3 years was any more grave than what would be expected by a regular harsh flu season, a flu season that happens, by the way, to a population that's getting older and older every year. There's one thing you need to take into account. If we get older and older every year, the curves of the flu deaths, of the excess death due to flu, will get higher. There's just more people that the flu can kill. It's not a sign that the flu is even harder. So by the standard of regular seasonal flu, COVID didn't do anything amazing, didn't do anything shocking. It's just a peak. I mean, I can pull it right here. It's just a peak that is slightly off season and seems to reach slightly higher than, but you have very high peaks on some other years here. But just taking 2018, well, that's a pretty big area under the curve here. In fact, it's a double peak. That was in 2018. Now combine these double peaks together and it's not so far from what happened in 2020. No one lost their shit in 2018. Clearly, the media tried to focus on this spike of death and made you believe that it was something totally out of the ordinary. It's just two times higher than this, but this is occurring over two peaks. So if you were adding the first peak to the second peak, you'd probably get not so far from a similar amount of death. And you have to take into account that the average age in 2020 is a little more than in 2018 because people are getting older. So we're not talking about an event that's outside the bounds, and yet we had the experts behave as if it was outside the bounds. And my last methodological trick to interpret the social world, because we've already addressed the basic epistemology, that's all about facts, all about what is the study, how many people did they test, does it stand on its own. But when you observe the people talking, the experts talking, ask yourself, have the experts contradicted standards that they would otherwise adhere to normally, or that they have stated they were adhering to? And in this pandemic, we have seen very early the experts behaving totally differently with this vaccine as they would on a drug. on a drug, they insist very specific data, and our claims on the label must be proven by the study. The claim on the label of the vaccine is you're going to stop the pandemic if you get just 2 doses of it. Stop the pandemic. That was not at all what the studies were demonstrating from the beginning. You were not stopping the pandemic, and so they changed their discourse. They contradicted their own standard. They went to, oh, well, you still have to get the vaccine because you're going to put less burden on our health system. See, they moved the goalpost and they reinvented a justification for getting the vaccine. That is another red flag. And the fact that throughout this pandemic, no one ever tried to apply a true double-blind study standard of long-term following, which they would ask for any new molecule. And it's, there are people constantly dying from Alzheimer's. And there's no one coming to say, oh, we have to stop the studies because these people are dying so much. We need the drug very fast. But that is exactly what Trump did. What Trump did, and then all of the experts under him, they started saying we can sacrifice the science because there's so many people dying that it's unethical to withhold it. So let's cut the curves around, let's cut the corners and get to it fast. Lightning fast development. Well, lightning fast development by definition gives you no insight on long-term effect, and these long-term effects would have been demanded and studied for years before they would let a drug on the market, even if that drug was to save people from Alzheimer's. So violation of self-standard, violation of stated standard, violation of previous standards. There was nothing to believe in this whole crap. So, Scott, and then, of course, yesterday I explained to Scott Adams, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? Maybe, 2 days ago. 2 days ago, I explained to Scott Adams that there was positive evidence for believing that there were doubts to be had around the vaccine, and there was early warnings, and there was very important information coming from the lab leak hypothesis, and that there was a way to tell certain things in this pandemic that the experts didn't want to tell. But today, what I did is how you should approach the positive claims of the other side. And you should apply all of the standards that I've listed. Thomas Howard says, Trump got let down the primrose path by his closest advisors. They all had one thing in common, very sad situation. Yeah, and it is totally the fault of Trump. Trump was weak. Trump has shown himself. The thing is, Trump wanted to play the middle of politics, and you don't do this. They're going to take over your administration. They're going to control all of it. They're going to crash the economy. They hate you so much, they're willing to Sudoku the economy. It's not Sudoku, but you know what these Japanese ninjas do, where they self-sacrifice? They're willing to self-sacrifice the life of America just to push their technocracy. So, yes, but those are heuristics that Scott Adams, this doubt of the seppuku. So that is the Japanese term. Seppuku, the American economy. That's what they did. Or origami, nighttime. Origami, I don't think that origami is committing suicide with a sword. I think it's folding paper. So yeah, this doubt of the government is never the central argument. The central argument has always been on the quality of the evidence provided, the transparency of the process, the validity of the methodology. They have violated everything they could violate on these fronts. So what I say also to anti-vax activists, concentrate on this. It's so weak. Have fun chopping the pear. Don't start, George Soros funded this and SBF funded the vaccine trial. All of this is very interesting, but it's all decorative stuff that you can talk after. What really matters is do I even have a claim of knowledge here? Is this something that I even start to believe? And we didn't. I never started to believe the vaccine. Of course, there's one thing I've been believing, and I still believe it. The vaccine seems to provide some form of protection on early and past variants. I'm still willing to state it today. It seems like the vaccine doesn't contain nothing, you know? But in the context of the natural unfolding of a pandemic, to think that this outdated protection that will systematically be outdated because nature is just faster than us, to think that this justifies the campaign of vaccination they've done, the social intimidation that they've done, the shutting down of liberty, individual liberty, including liberty to business, liberty to discuss, to fucking discuss. That is absolutely unacceptable. We have super chats. Dead Star was saying, why are you not live on Twitter? No need to take calls, but don't you want the tweeters listening? I told the co-host of Twitter, you know, Itch Slap, I told him that I wanted to take a couple of days to order my thoughts on the Twitter space experience. Not that I disliked it, I loved it, and we're going to be back on Twitter space. In fact, you know what I'm trending toward, guys? I'm trending toward 100% Twitter space shows with Odyssey. I'm trending toward 7 days a week being on Twitter space. But I wanted to take a couple of days with the audience here to collect my thoughts, to feel the experiment, and to feel how it feels thinking about it. But I am so enthusiastic about Twitter space. Absolutely, I was starting this experience thinking we're gonna do Ask Me Anything once a week maybe. But the audiences don't even overlap. The extra viewers I get on Twitter, I don't lose them here. Maybe some of you are just watching the two places and you're kind of generating a view on the two things. But I think that a lot of the audience just doesn't overlap. And you look at the normies that were on the calls, they are different people. They are not as erudite of the internet as you guys. So that's interesting. That's an opening to a different branch of people. You know, people were asking me, like they didn't know me, some of them. They were not JF fans. It seems that on Odyssey, we have mostly JF fans. Maximum 10% overlap, says Spindly Opinion. And so I'm so fascinated by what Twitter space could become. I might do 100% almost, if not 100% of the shows on both Odyssey and Twitter space. I'm thinking also of dropping Entropy. I don't know what you guys think about it, but I've been maintaining Entropy not because it makes me a living, but I've been maintaining it because I thought maybe some of you don't have the ability to include a credit card on Odyssey. Maybe the Odyssey system doesn't work for some of you. But I think that by now we have done the transition and most super chats come from Odyssey. So I'm thinking kick Entropy out, although I respect the people and I want Entropy to succeed. But kick them out of my life and instead have a tab open on Twitter spaces. Sinus says, JF, do it. Otherwise, this remains an echo chamber. I'll do it. I'll certainly do it. I have some technical stuff to figure out. Find a way for the emulator not to click. The emulator refreshes on inactivity after 15 minutes or 30 minutes, and it kicks me out of the Twitter space. I want to fix this. But once this is set up and everything is set up, I'll do that. So, we are done for the regular show tonight. We're going to be headed toward the private show for the Patreon and Subscribestar and backed by supporters at the $20 level. We're going to have our usual people who often join us. I can't wait. I think that Fadam will be there. We're going to talk certainly about replicators. Oh, yeah, I forgot many of the super chats, so let's get back to it. Ali Mayer sends $5. He says, great show, JF. Thanks for the info. Happy to do it. Philosoraptor says, Harakiri. Is it Seppuku or Harakiri? Oh, yeah, Harakiri. Seppuku would be some kind of game, I guess. Dino Logovic says, Trump's new speed of science trademark NFT for sale now. Oh, God. I mean, that would have been cringe. A vaccine NFT. Speed of science. You know, Trump driving a Formula One car, bringing in the vaccines. Holy shit. Bottom Bonham says, what about never trust a group? Only trust one individual at a time and make sure that individual intends on and is aware of you trusting him. And never trust in prevention, only in reaction. This last one covers the so you won't go to the hospital if you're sick rebuke. Well, this is not bad heuristics. But ultimately, if too many people were to do this, the experts would find ways to emulate individuality. That's the problem, ultimately. It's that the people with bad intentions and poor practices, they can make themselves undistinguishable from the trustable people. So what you are saying there basically leads you to trust a dark horse, to trust a man who's going on his own and making his own views. And that's the closest thing you can get to trusting yourself. But I say trusting yourself ultimately is more important because no matter if you're sure that you're listening to an individual who's not part of a group, eventually there's going to be people displaying that they are individual, building a career and an image around being dark horses when they are not truly dark horses. So be careful with this. All right, and Silver Spider was saying in Super Chat, oh no, this was the rap that I read earlier, so I've already read it. All right, so if you are part of the Subscribestar, part of the Patreon, or backed by, go check your link. We're going to have the show in 25 minutes from now at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You're going to get the link through your support platform. Bye-bye, everyone.